Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
I just want to remind the listeners, if you'd like to give us a call today, please, we welcome your calls at 1-855-566-3738. That's 855-566-3738. If you'd like to ask us a question or if you have an opinion on the topics that we'll be discussing today, please feel free to call us. We look forward to your calls. And let's get right to the market report today. We have gold up once again today, and it was briefly over 1,200. We're currently at 1,193. Up $4.80. Silver's up 15 cents at $16.62. Platinum is down $2 at $1,149. Palladium is up 13 at $797. The USDX today is trading lower 0.34 at 95.09. Crude oil today is up 1.50 at 60.43. And the paper markets today, I didn't think the Dow was down 142 points, 17,927. You have the NASDAQ down 77 points at 4,939. The S&P 25 to the downside at 2,089. The 10-year yield, 2.18%. The euro trading at 1.12. That was higher in the markets today. In the European markets, Germany was down 2.5%, down 284 points. Hong Kong was down they took my numbers away at 0.33% of the downside. And that looks interesting to see oil so significantly higher. Just a lot of crazy things going on in the Middle East. Everybody's bombing everybody. Nobody knows. You know, what a terrible place to be. I mean, I can't even imagine Al living in those conditions, and I'm sure their lifestyles are different than what they are here, so you can't make, apple-to-apple comparison, but, I can't even imagine. Or are they just so used to it that it's just another day? I can't imagine.
We've talked about this before, but the Middle East, there was a time a few hundred years ago when the Muslim world was a source of great knowledge in terms of astronomy. They created algebra. They were way ahead of much of what was happening in Europe. Huh? They were brilliant people. But today we seldom see books that are published out of the Middle East. The books coming from Muslim faith. And I believe the reason is, and this is not a small thing, and it goes to this issue of the violence that we see in the Middle East. They have sought to emulate Muhammad because Muhammad married his first cousin. And they've been doing this for several centuries. They said, oh, if Muhammad did it, then it's good for us too. And the net result is they have become inbred, according to two reports out of Europe, two studies, serious studies out of Europe. They're saying, look, these people are so inbred that they have a higher incidence of birth defects, mental illness, retardation, can't see in the dark. There are a bunch of problems that are associated with the Muslim faith. They have emulated by marrying their first cousin, which is prohibited on a Jewish-faced Christian. You just can't. We just don't do that in the cultures that have come up from Christianity and from the Jewish faith. You don't marry your first cousin. Muslims did. Point I'm making is, given those disabilities, their predilection for violence in the Muslim world is not necessarily surprising.
Yeah, but look at the violence in this country. We're sort of experiencing the same thing.
Well, it depends on where you want to point to it.
Well, the violence in this country is rising, and
it's not. Crime rates are actually down in this country.
Well, it depends on you get the reports. And it depends on what type of crime.
We get no more news about it and the rest of that sort of thing. But
all your cities will say the crime is down, but we know that's not true. It depends on how
just like every other
report that this country gives. Or that,
well, it depends on where you're pointing to it. When you're talking about crime up, absolutely up in the African American community. But where else is it up? You know, maybe in the Mexican community, the illegal alien community. We may be able to point there.
But it's still violence in this country.
I get that, but you need to separate things out and look at them and say, okay, this community is more violent than that community, and we need to come up with an explanation as to why that's so. And it may just be that poverty is more endemic in some communities than in others. Or it may be that some communities, you know, again, this Muslims thing, irrational or unreasonable. They have a problem.
They have poverty also.
Well, I understand that. But, poverty plus mental illness is not...
Perhaps
you know,
the same common denominator.
Well, I don't doubt that poverty lies at the heart of much of the violence in this world. But the question is that poverty due to personal disabilities, or is that poverty due to oppression by others? And the answer may be both, maybe more one than the other. But we aren't going to solve any of these problems by refusing to look at them and diagnose them properly. So, anyway.
Well,
just saying the Middle East is crazy, and maybe it is crazy. You know, it seems crazy. My God, the people just keep shooting and blah, 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 blah. Is it only poverty, or is it a predisposition to mental illness based on too much inbreeding?
Yeah. How long ago was that report?
Last year sometime. There were two of them that came out. I think the first one probably came out perhaps close to a year ago, and another one followed 6 months later, if I recall correctly. But they were serious researchers. This wasn't just someone who just came out with an shoot from the hip hypothesis. These people did studies and said, look, this is a problem. And it's extraordinary information because it refutes the idea that the Muslim faith is valid. If God is Allah, if He is Allah, why has He subjected His people to the effects of inbreeding? It's good evidence that the faith is false. the Muslims have effectively been cursed by their determination to emulate Muhammad and marry their first cousins as a people. Not all of them. That's not what I'm saying, and I'm certainly not saying that everybody who's Muslim is mentally ill. But I am saying that they are apparently, according to the reports, there's a disproportionate number of people who suffer from that problem. So I think it's the sort of thing that you might want to bring to people's attention. Say, I think I'm going to become a Muslim. Really? Is that what you want? So are you sure? I mean, it's the sort of thing that needs to be considered. If you want to be a Muslim, be a Muslim. That's your business. But at least know what the problems are going in. Before you make that decision, you make that change, do a little research on your own and see if these are legitimate problems, see if the information you believe the danger is real, and if it is, then, I don't know, is that a real faith? True faith? Huh? Or is it some sort of an illusion?
Well, let's go ahead and move on to, let's talk about retirement and Medicare and Social Security.
Well, what have we got here? It's Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham has announced that he's running for president, or he's probably running for president. He says there's a 92.5% probability that he's running for president, even if he's still back out of it. But one of the things he plans to do is deliver the bad news to the people, the American people, and tell them, look, we got to do something to make Social Security and Medicare keep working. And he's doing this despite conventional political wisdom warns that you don't get elected by telling people bad news.
Why would
they pump sunshine?
Why would anybody want to vote for somebody who says he's 92.5% sure? That's not.
Well, I'm 92.5. I'm 92.5% sure that I probably won't vote for him, Melody.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't think that's a great way to enter into a presidential campaign. Well, I'm 92.5% sure. Okay.
Yeah, just get off.
Boy, you're a good, strong.
Yeah, get off the fence. Either get in or get out. You know, this isn't Greece. You can't drag it on forever. Just, are you in? Are you going to run or are you not going to run?
That's who I want for president.
Exactly.
All right, go ahead, Al.
All right. Well, in any case, he's warning that the system will fail, and he's advocating that we go back to the Simpson-Bowles Commission, which in 2010 issued a well-regarded bipartisan report on how to solve all the big problems related to taxes and spending. Commission leaders Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles released an updated version in 2013. The reports were widely praised and then buried. All right, it was a great idea, but we ain't doing it. Graham wants to dust off Simpson Bowles and use it as a template for straightening out Washington's finances, which rely too heavily on borrowing. All right, don't want any more borrowing, resulting in a national debt that now exceeds $18 trillion. In fact, John Williams, I've said this probably three times a week for the past year, I don't know, once a week at least, maybe twice. John Williams says he calculates the national debt is closer to $100 trillion. And Congressional Budget Office and economist Lawrence Kotlikoff have agreed that the real debt, including unfunded liabilities, is over $200 trillion. All right. So the idea that we have only an $18 trillion national debt is suspect. Nevertheless, Graham is complaining that we have an $18 trillion federal debt. And so here's a list of some of the recommendations in the Simpson-Bowles report. Number one, require wealthier seniors to pay a larger share of their Medicare benefits. Not unreasonable, but nobody's going to like it. Seniors aren't going to like paying a larger share. If we only do it to the wealthier seniors, we can get away with it, but they aren't going to like it. Number two, raise eligibility age for Medicare from 65 to 67. Again, we're going to have people that are going to object to that. We may be able to get away with it, but there are going to be people that are going to object to it, and cut back on fees paid to healthcare providers. Oh, the healthcare providers, you got to give us our money. You got to take the, if you're going to cut costs, you got to cut someplace else. Not for us. We need that money. Number three, raise the eligibility age for Social Security. Lower the annual cost of living increases and raise the portion of every worker's income subject to Social Security tax withholding. All they're doing is you won't get a Social Security until later in life. You're going to have to pay more to get Social Security in the first place. And who's going to cheer for that? You know? Number four, replace current income tax brackets with three new brackets, 12%, 22%, 28%. Tax investment income the same as labor income. Again, it's going to be tough to get people to support this just because there will be special interests that are saying, heck no, I don't want any part of that. That's not good for me. You know, I'm in favor of a lot of this. It's good. It's bad for the rest of them, and it doesn't hurt me. But the part that hurts me, I can't support that. Well, they go through, and they have more. They have more on the list. And the point is there are so many special interests that are adversely affected by the recommendations in the Simpson-Bowles report that it becomes very unlikely that we are going to implement Simpson-Bowles until one way or another this economy has nearly collapsed. If American history, recent American history, indicates that the American people are so addicted to government benefits and government subsidies and government exemptions and whatever, that we're just not going to give up any of that. We're going to hang on to whatever suits our special interest, and we're not going to elect Senator Graham to be the Republican nominee for president if he's going to come out and give us bad news. Now, it may be that Simpson-Bowles' proposals, they may be brilliant, necessary, and even inevitable, but they are proposals that ultimately offend just about everyone one way or another, and that just doesn't sound like a formula for getting anything done in Congress today. You got to have somebody who's going to say, yeah, that's a good idea. And I doubt that you're going to find that by advocating the Simpson-Bowles recommendations. And on top of that, why are we having the problem with Social Security? In large part because of government mismanagement. This isn't a problem where people didn't pay in enough. You paid in enough if the money had been invested properly. I've mentioned this in the past, but my stepdad, back when I was, back in 1958, 59, I remember this, and it stuck in my mind for years, never knew why. It just did. But he explained to me back then. He said, you know, if you took the money that you were required to deposit into Social Security and you put it in the bank, from you started at 18 and you continued to do it throughout your working career, it was his understanding, and he, you know, he received his information from somebody, I don't know, who read it. I don't remember the source. I was just a kid when he was explaining it to me. But he was explaining that you would have $1 million when it was time for you to retire. With compounding and compounding and so on, you'd have that. You don't have $1 million right now when you're going to retire on Social Security. You got $1,000 to $1,300 a month. That's what you got. All right? You could have had a cool million if government had been responsible, but they said, forget the responsibility. The Social Security, you've made the contribution, and government is going to spend it right now. And we'll put an IOU in the Social Security vault. But we're not going to leave the money there for you. We'll get it from future taxpayers. Well, they've made just huge miscalculations. It was mismanaged. They promised that if you made the contribution, they'd guarantee you'd have money for your old age and so on. Well, you aren't going to have that much money. You're not going to have as much as was promised. And people reasonably can ask, you know, I paid mine. Why aren't I getting what I was, at least what I was promised? And Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, was coming out, and he said, well, we have to cut back on this. We have to raise taxes on the people that are still paying, and we have to cut back on the benefits for people that are getting ready to retire in order to make the system work. And the truth is, if they'd made the system work all along by investing the money rather than spending it, we wouldn't have to go through this. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and it's time for us to take commercials, Melody.
Well, I wanted to say something.
Well, you can say something when we come back.
All right.
All right, folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Does the cost and risk of conventional healthcare concern you? Wouldn't you prefer inexpensive solutions to health problems rather than disease management? If so, tune into Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, I want to remind the listeners we're going to carry through the special from yesterday, and these are actually prices based on Friday's numbers. Gold and silver are up the past 2 days, so this really is a great special. 21-ounce silver eagles plus 1/10 of an ounce gold eagle. $538, and if you add a Mint State 64, $20 St. Gaudens to the order, it brings it up to our special $2,015. So you can buy either or. You can buy the 538 $20 special. You can add the Mint State 64 $20 St. Gaudens for $2,015. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And I just want to remind listeners, yesterday I did a comparison on some of the online sellers, and our prices, 99% of the time were lower. And we were pretty much all the same on Gold Eagles, depending on whatever day and whoever runs specials and so forth. I just want to remind you, does anybody remember Tolving in California? How many millions of dollars did he end up costing those who trusted him, people who thought that they could get product at below wholesale, or that there wasn't any other dealer in the country that could match their price? There's reasons. There's reasons for that. And so I ask you, are you ready to send your money to folks who sell you product at below wholesale? I mean, you're just asking for trouble. There's reasons.
The average person doesn't know how to determine wholesale.
Oh, trust me, those who know, those who a lot don't, but I'll guarantee you a lot who know the price is that significantly lower have already shopped around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, a large volume of folks know. And
some people have some extraordinary sales, but when they're doing that, it's evidence that they are cash poor. And they are willing to essentially give away product in order to generate enough income to pay the rent and pay the phone bills and so on. They need cash flow, and therefore they are prepared to sell at almost amazingly low prices. They're going to take losses in order to, because they have to have cash. Well, for business to be healthy and stay in business, you got to be able to make enough money to continue to get by. You don't have to be greedy, but you can't just be giving product away.
You know, I sent David Krieger, he's been on this program a couple of times, and I sent him a little note, and what do you think of these guys, blah, blah, blah. And he says, it seems every one of these slick operators who sell cheap end up going out of business and taking someone else's money with them. Mm-hmm. Or they spend that money on wine, women, and song. and that's, we don't know what the reasons, how they're doing it, why they're doing it, but we also know history has a tendency to repeat itself when it comes to anyone, no matter what business that you're in. If you're selling it below market, be careful.
Well, you can't.
Be careful.
You can't do that for long.
It's that simple.
For
$10,000
an automobile. Something's wrong here. Either the cars are hot or I'm not going to be able to deliver. It's a Ponzi scheme. Something is strange going on. This is the same idea. You mentioned that you were looking into, I don't know that you want to make mention of the name of the business, but at least one of them you're calling up and you wanted to see what your competitors were doing and asked, who are you guys? And you couldn't get an answer. They wouldn't tell you who they were.
I didn't call them specifically, but on their website, I tried to find their names. They contact us and who we are. But when you look under who we are, I couldn't find any names or anything like that. So,
well, it's another.
And they've been around, and they're very popular. It's very popular. But let's get back to Social Security.
I've got a second article on Social.
I just wanted to say this before. This is what I wanted to say prior to the break. Is everybody always blames like it's the baby boomers' fault for getting old and they're going into the program because there's so many of us and we're going to destroy the system. No, the system is destroyed by poor management and by going in there and stealing the funds out of there. And they always talk about Social Security and Medicare, but no one ever talks about Medicaid. Do you ever hear anyone ever talking about reforming Medicaid or cutting those programs? And of course, Medicaid is a social health care program for families and individuals with low income and limited resources. But you never hear about Medicaid. It's always Social Security and it's always Medicare that affects the majority of senior citizens. So anyway. Got
another article here that touches on Social Security. This is from Market Watch. 3 out of 4 retirees receiving reduced Social Security benefits. 3 out of 4 receiving reduced Social Security benefits. That's the headline. Growing numbers of workers expect to rely heavily on Social Security as a major source of income in retirement. But almost 3/4 of current retirees are receiving reduced benefits. This according to a new report, Gallup survey. And they said what it comes down to, the best way to maximize Social Security is to delay claiming benefits until full retirement age, which is climbing gradually to 67 or beyond. A person due to receive a benefit of $1,000 at full retirement age of 66 would receive only $750 again per month at age 62. So if you sign up for Social Security age 62, you get $750 a month. If you sign up at 66, you get $1,000 a month. The earliest age at which the 62 is the earliest age most people can claim. And if you wait until you're 70 to sign up, you can get $1,320 per month. All right. So they're just saying, look, the math is here that you can get more if you will be patient and you wait a little while to fill in your application. But they go on and say that math isn't stopping many workers from claiming benefits early. All right. Social Security is structured to say you get the most if you wait, you take the benefits late, but people are taking the benefits early. And as a result, 73% were receiving benefits, reduced benefits, because of entitlement prior to full retirement age. This is interesting. It's not an indictment of the Social Security system. These are just the rules. But it does indicate something about people in this country. 3 out of 4 Americans are either so wore out they can't continue working after age 62, or they're so fed up with their jobs that they can't stand working beyond age 62, or they've been fired and they can't get a job at age 62, and therefore they have to accept the lower Social Security rate of $750 per month.
A lot of them are being bought out by their corporations to retire early. And I think, too, Al, once you get to 62, maybe 65, maybe you think, well, maybe I'm not going to live to 70. So I think your thought process changes also.
I'm sure it does.
And I've had people who, I mean, they have nice pensions with, you know, some large corporation or something, which always makes a difference, too. And they figured out, well, you know, we actually, what do we lose if we figure it out? If we wait till we're 70, but we take it now, they really don't lose that much considering they're taking the funds for how many years? 8 years. So you figure that up, and then you figure out how much longer you're going to live past 70. You know, it kind of washes itself out.
I understand that but my point is just that it indicates people are under a lot of financial stress.
Absolutely.
Financial stress, you know, psychological stress. They just can't stand working in that cubicle another day, or maybe they just can't get a job.
My question is, if you don't have, we've talked about this how many times on this program, the amount of savings that people have, who can live? Or I know lots of people do. Lots of people do. I know lots of people who live on $1,000 at full retirement age of 66. Or $750 if you don't have any savings. It's difficult.
I know it's difficult. It's one of those things. It's, again, this
it's possible,
is one of those situations that just indicates the system is fragmenting, it's disintegrating, mm-hmm. and the promises that were made that the government's going to take care of you, you give us money now, okay, and then we'll see that you get money when you retire. Well, you can see where that's going. Those promises are not being kept, not to the extent that they should have been. We're dealing with and we could say it's mismanagement, but it's not just mismanagement. Government intends to get your money and use it for the greater glory of the government. and they've run Social Security for a long time, and the government has profited from it for a considerable period of time, and now it's becoming time to pay off. And government's saying, wait a second, we can't afford to pay that off right now. We're going to have to cut your benefits and raise taxes on the rest of them who can't yet collect Social Security. And it was like Melody said earlier in the program, the problem here is not simply that the system was defective as originally designed. The problem is the government has simply exploited the system. It's been mismanaged by your congressman, your senator. They've got their pensions, and their pensions are going to make your little Social Security look like chump change. They can feed that. What you get for Social Security, they can spend on their dog and keeping their dog through their golden years. I'm exaggerating, but you get the idea. So what are you going to do? I'm not sure, but the part that's unfair about this is that government made the promises, and people who have contributed and played by the rules are going to wind up having to survive in their retirement with less. That's all. Government promised X amount of dollars for you. It turns out now you're not going to get that because they can't afford to keep their promise. This is part and parcel of an argument I've been making for probably 5 years. And it was after I first read John Williams and realized that the debt, the national debt, is much larger than the government admits. And I advocated the idea repeatedly that what can't be paid won't be paid, which seems obvious that's no big insight. That seems obvious. But the point is we are so deep in debt that we are not going to be able to pay all the debts. And that includes the benefits that are due to retirees, Social Security retirees. And it includes benefits that are due to welfare recipients and the subsidies that are due to farmers and corporations and whatever. We've come to depend on government. It was easy money. It was free money. We took it and we liked it. And that's just human to do that. But it's just as in the same sense that it's just natural for a fish to bite at a bug in the water, right? Except maybe the bug is a fly on the end of a line, and next thing you know, you're hooked. We've behaved irresponsibly. We're so deep in debt, we can't pay all the debts. And the danger in that, from my perspective, is not just sit back and say, oh my gosh, the debts aren't going to be paid. You have to look at it and realize for every debt, all right, for every man who owes $1,000, there's another man who's holding a piece of paper says who's treating that piece of paper as an asset. And you say, I've got a $1,000 debt instrument here, and that means I'm worth $1,000. And if I get 100 of them, I have $100,000. My net worth is $100,000. And what I'm saying is if the debts are substantially repudiated, we can bet that the correlative assets are also going to be repudiated. And there's the great danger. If we only could wipe out the debt, wouldn't be a problem. Oh, it may be a kind of problem, but it wouldn't be as significant as we're going to wipe out paper assets. And all of a sudden, nobody's going to have enough money to go out and pay for a new school or a new shopping center or a new business, a new car. The paper assets will disappear along with the debt. We are getting to that point, and Lindsey Graham talked about him earlier in the program, him coming out and saying, look, we got to do something about Social Security. It's just a way of saying the government knows we are getting to the point where what can't be paid won't be paid. It may be that Mr. Graham's or Senator Graham's concerns about Social Security, it may be that they're premature in the sense that we won't do anything significant to Social Security until the last possible moment, which could be, if we can believe government estimates, 15, 20 years from now. All right? And that's probably what will happen. But there's also a high probability that if government says Social Security is going to go broke in 20 years, I'm willing to bet you that it's going to go broke within 5 to 10 years. I could be wrong, but I don't trust the government's numbers. I don't trust their projections. They say, oh, we're good for another 20 years, and then the whole thing will dissolve. I think we're good for maybe 5, 10 at the max would be my guess. That's all it is a guess, but still that's my guess. We are at that moment when what can't be paid won't be paid, and it's going to be trouble for all of us. Let's take some commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Greeks thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for Thyme Tincture NT to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We've got an article here on Hillary Clinton, of course. And this was in the Washington Times. Top Dem money man departs because Clinton hasn't answered ethics questions. A top Democratic money man recruited by Hillary Rodham Clinton's presidential campaign has put fundraising activities on hold, saying he can't do it with a clear conscience because the former Secretary of State has too many unanswered questions swirling around her. We're talking about New York businessman John Cooper, who Team Clinton enlisted for its elite core of early fundraisers known as Hill Starters. This to me is, small article, and all it says essentially is that Hillary can't even hang on to her own fundraisers. There are questions about her behavior at Benghazi. There are questions about email having their own private server. All right, that she's supposed that the information on those emails should have been made available in government records, and instead it's been apparently destroyed where no one can find what was in those emails. There are questions about Hillary's character. There's questions about her competence. You know, what we can't doubt is her determination to be president of the United States. I don't know that anyone has ever wanted to be president more than Hillary. It may be, but she has a level of determination. But is it determination or is it obsession? I don't think that she's ultimately, I'm not a fan. I'm not a supporter. And just doing this, reading this one article, again, a top Democrat money man departs. That's the sort of thing. I think that Hillary's campaign will fizzle. I'm inclined to believe that Hillary will be out of the race before the Democratic primary is held, or at least before the Democratic nominating convention is held. She's going to drop out during the primaries, maybe even before the primaries, I suspect. Can I prove it? Nope. I'm only guessing. That's all I have. But it's not going to surprise me. She's got a bunch of things that just doesn't work for me, and I don't think it'll work for most people.
And I've said for how long she wouldn't be a contender. You know, she's just got too much baggage. Nobody even wants to be around her. And there's also, I believe, the elite don't want her in there because, even as much as she is one of them, I mean, a lot of this stuff, her emails and so forth, even though they have disappeared to some degree, they were released. And she's another distraction, and I believe O'Malley is going to be the Democratic nominee.
Well, we'll see. There's time for other Democrats to jump in on this. But even Bill Clinton is not going to actively help her. I've seen an article about Bill back a week or 10 days ago.
Well, he's
to be in the background.
Yeah, he's
background advisor, but he says, I'm not a good campaigner anymore. I'm not angry about anything. I just want to be around my grandchild and enjoy that.
Yeah, well, you know, look at his foundation. There's so much heat there. He'd be terrible for her campaign,
well,
even if her campaign survived. You know, he's
but again,
too
busy. It's just a question of the rats are leaving. Sinking ship.
Yeah, well, yeah, true. Hey, Al, here I have an article. 16-year-old are allowed to vote at Hyattsville, Maryland. 16-year-old voters headed to the polls today for a historic election, the first since the town changed its minimum voting age. The teens went to the polls to vote for elected offices in the city, including the mayor and 10 council members. The minimum voting age was changed earlier this year after a public hearing and a city council vote. Hyattsville is the second city in the country to lower the voting age to 16 after Tacoma Park did so 2 years ago. Yay or nay?
I think it's interesting. It's kind of amusing. I don't know whether it's good or bad. It's sort of thing where we might be able to have the high school council could become the city council. You know, we could get more bang for the buck or whatever, have one councilman serving two purposes, one for the city and one for the high school. Hard to say. I think, if anything, if I'm going to change ages, I think I would increase the age. You know, you only have to be 35 years old to be president. I don't think anybody knows enough at that age. And I wouldn't have agreed with that when I was that age. You know, I get that. And here I am, senior citizen. And so it's not surprising that I might think that we should have a higher age. You know, they set the ages. You could be 25 to be a congressman, 30 to be a senator, and 35 to be a president in the Constitution, if I recall correctly. I think that's correct. I don't have it here in front of me, but I believe
correct. Yeah, in those days, you were dead by 50.
Yeah, I understand. Average, that's right. Average life expectancy was 50 years old. Those numbers weren't, those ages were not unreasonable 200 years ago. Today, I think they are. And I think there's a big problem where we elect congressmen and congresswomen based on their appearance, which is to say, typically on their youth. We see that more than we should. We get that rather than character. We might be better off if we added 5 or 10 years to each. Can't be in the House of Representatives until you're 30, maybe 35. Can't be a senator until you're 40, maybe 45. Can't be president until you're 50 years old. You know, the world is more complex. It takes time for people to understand it. It takes time for people to generate a sense of values for themselves and a sense of ethics. And they say, these are lines. I see these lines, and I'm not going to cross these lines. Those lines aren't clear to younger people. And in fact, it's not just clear. It's not just that the lines aren't clear when you're younger. Insofar as you can see the lines, they become a challenge to jump over them. You get older and say, no, I think I can play by the rules. All right. I would argue if we're going to, you know, we're going to talk about ages, you're going to let 16-year-old kids vote. I think it's a little bit silly. I think it's silly on one level. But on the flip side of that coin, we're going to change ages. Let's increase the age you need to be to run for political office.
I think it's silly at this point in time because you only have two locations that have changed the age. However, if it became a trend and you see more and more 16-year-olds voting, no. I'm talking, you know, way down the road. But
I don't even know. I did an article. I just posted a little article on my blog today about robots and pointing out, you know, I started out by talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Terminator movie from back 1984, if I recall correctly. And I thought, yeah, I thought it was a cool movie, but I never expected to see any of those Terminator-style robots in my lifetime. I thought this was down the road, if ever. But in fact, we're getting very close to them, right? If they don't already exist, we're getting to a point where, in my opinion, we might see Terminator-type robots. They might be available for making war or performing police activities or whatever. They might be available in as little as 3 years. They're making some extraordinary. Well, the point is that in the 31 years, I think it's 31 since 1984, the world has changed so much more rapidly than I thought it would. And you look out the door, you look at videos, you see what's going on, you say, oh my God, it's changing faster and faster and faster. I don't know how many people are going to be able to keep up with the change. You know, things are happening. This goes a little bit to the idea of how young can you be? You know, in fact, how young should you be to be able to run for public office? Maybe you need to be older just to have a better grasp of what's happening, and things are changing so rapidly. I'm not sure that the youth is prepared to deal with the problems. They think they are, of course. When I was a kid, what couldn't I do? You know, you knew. Mm-hmm. I can do it all, you know. You get older and you realize, no, maybe I can't. And maybe I never could. I thought I could, but maybe that was never true. You need that, in my opinion, to hold high public office, and maybe age gives you a way of dealing with the changes. Not only dealing with the changes, but remembering what to try to preserve despite the technological changes. Complex business. In fact, when I think about it, maybe instead of allowing 16-year-old kids to vote, maybe we shouldn't allow anybody to vote until they're 25, or at least 21. Maybe we should raise the voting age and raise the age for politicians. I don't think it would necessarily, I don't expect that to happen, but I don't think it would necessarily be a bad idea.
The world certainly is changing.
And rapidly accelerating.
It's combining. And not all the changes are good. I mean, that's the problem.
I understand that.
And that's the difficult part to understand. You have all these changes, But yet I fail to see the positive in so many. Sure, yeah, okay, so you can watch your parents in their home without having to visit them to see if they're going to fall down and break their ankle. You know, your home is monitored with sensors. There's apps being created so, you know, the passenger on the airline, if he has a rapid heartbeat or he's sick, you can monitor him. It's all about monitoring. And, you know, you could say these things are all good and fine, but yet are they?
Well, it's just like the robots.
Yeah.
I had two articles, one from the Japanese Times, and that was the one that ended. Another one from Misha's Global Trend Economic Forecast or whatever. I can't remember the precise name, but Ms. Shedlock's work, he's talking about robots, points out they just did a survey and they did a study in Germany where they calculated that two-thirds of German workers would be replaced by robots, but they said it would be in several decades. Well, several decades to me is 30 to 50 years. I'm not worried about 30 to 50 years from now. But we had another one from the Japanese Times, and they're pointing out that China bought, I don't remember, 25% of the robots that were manufactured in the world this last year. And they intend to fully, they intend that 80% of their industries, their biggest industries, are going to be robotized within 5 years, by 2020. All right? What that means is that robots are not just cheaper than American labor, they're cheaper than Chinese labor. China was built on cheap labor in the last 20 years, and all of a sudden the robots are going to be replacing 80% of the industrial workers in China within the next 5 years. The next 5 years, what is China going to do when 80% of the people working in their industry don't have jobs? How are they going to deal with that? And how are we going to deal with it in this country when we have to face up the fact that these robots are not just cheaper than American workers. They're cheaper than Chinese workers, which means these things are economically irresistible. And in a sense, we are already entering into a war with robots. They're not coming to shoot at us or the kind of fight we saw in the Terminator, but what we are seeing, they're taking our jobs. And 5 years, 80% in China. What is it going to be in this country? How are we really going to reduce unemployment rates in this country if we have more and more robots coming in? And they will if they're that cheap. It's cheaper than imported labor. These robots, in the end, are probably cheaper than illegal aliens. You don't have to worry about losing your job to an illegal alien. You may have to worry about losing your job to a robot, however. And what are we going to do if 80% of the industrial workers in this country, and it'll be a big chunk of all the workers in this country, lose their jobs to robots? What's going to happen when many of us no longer have jobs? We are no longer competitive. We are no longer productive. And that means, maybe it means we're no longer necessary. And we see that happening, and we see the other technological changes that are happening, and you can imagine that the world is going to change dramatically. Not a little bit. We're not going to ease into it. There are changes that are taking place right now, as I'm speaking, that are so enormous, we don't even know what they are right now, but they're taking place right now. They may not impact us for another 18, 24 months. I don't know when the stuff hits the fan, but the world is changing so fast. How do you protect yourself? You need to think about it and come to the best conclusion you possibly can. We're out of time, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I would not.
money in a rich man's world. Money, money, money.